We're going to wore the brass figligee with Bond's oak leaf palm. If you can identify the commercial that's from, one of the favorite old tunes of the past. And Tony, will you please, if you will, Rose of Washington Square to get us underway on this brilliant summer evening. All together, gang. Now bring it up, Tony. Oh,
Rose.
Rose.
Oh. Of Washington Square.
Oh, a flower is so rare. Da 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 da
da da da da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da That'll hold the crowd for a while there. Hold it, hold it, hold it, gang. That's enough. That's enough, old gang. Don't you sometimes find yourself behaving like one of those crowds in a beer commercial? Oh, you know, running around guzzling beer and yelling and hollering and slapping chicks. You know where. And having a great time. I mean, of course, it looks like from most commercials that they really don't slap chicks. There was one great commercial I saw recently. Came out about 3 o'clock in the morning between reels of a film featuring Gilbert Roland. Gilbert Roland, don't you remember? Well, Gilbert Roland stopped for a second and out came this commercial. And they were screaming and yelling and hollering, and it was a commercial for the new glass cans. Well, they used to call them bottles, Tony. They're now called glass cans. Just drink your beer in glass cans with no necks. I've known many a person with no neck. And at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, when you're sitting there and suddenly they hit you with that concept of the new glass cans. Of course, you know the can people are coming out with the new tin bottles. And I think it'll work. All right, one more chorus of Rose of Washington Square, gang. And, of course, we're all part of it. There's nobody's putting anybody down. I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, the whole shamu, the whole fruitcake, we're all... Are you a raisin or are you a piece of orange peel? All right. All right, that's enough. That's not Rose of Washington Square. What do you got on there? Is it really? That's the bridge, then. Well, I don't play bridges where I come from. You know, speaking of the whole schlemu, we are. You know, the one thing you've just got to face is that all of mankind is you have to imagine it as a giant fruitcake, and of course the raisins don't get along with the with the lemon peels. It's too obvious, and the ginger doesn't get along with the citron, and all the way up and down it's fist fighting everywhere. But you've got to realize we're all in it together, whether we like it or not. I know you're one of the good people. I know it. I mean, you wouldn't be here listening if you weren't one of the honest, reliable, sober, industrious people with a clear, clean-cut eye that never, never hesitates to spot a phony every time you see one. And I know that you're above all that jazz, of course. But let's face it, friends, we're all in it together. Slobs, good guys, bad guys, all of us. One more little chorus there, Tony. Bring it up there, Tony, old boy. One more there. There we go. Einstein.
That you should blush and
oh.
Seem, but be the queen of some fair garden rose.
Oh. All right, I'm playing a bad alto here. I wish you would set that back in the beginning there. And, of course, we're all part of it. Here's a special Special report from Japan. A man bites five women for crime studies in Japan. A special report from Dentistry Magazine of International Scope. A man bit five women in interest of science and crime detection recently in Tokyo. Man sunk teeth into shoulder blade, forearm, and left deltoid muscle of shoulder of each of five women in the Tokyo Japanese Pharmacing Criminology Scientific Test. The experiment was part of study of legal value of dentistry in criminal investigations. The bite marks were photographed and measured at regular intervals. In addition, discoloration and swelling of skin around bite areas were also studied. The biting was done under scientific direction of a team of research dentists at Tokyo Dental College, Japan, and has come to the attention of American Dental Association in Chicago, a very well-known city for crime detection. By observing the healing process of bite injury and color change of bleeding under skin, the scientists were able to estimate approximately when the biting occurred. We salute scientists moving forward. Special report from Radio Tokyo Scientific Division, Public Service Department.
No.
And once in a while, I revert to my native South Chicagoese. And I mean, if you think the Japanese are on the right tack, here's one here from the Saturday Evening Post. Datelined and headlined. It's an interesting-looking ad with the big block letters. It says, "What is a burial vault?" A burial vault is an outer receptacle for protection of the casket to provide protection against other effects of the elements and to support the earth. Wilbert is the burial vault which provides these features at a reasonable price. Over 83 years of experiment and experience in research, combined with a completely controlled quality program, guarantees a reliable product. So reliable, we have been granted the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval. Quick, quick! Sunday we're gonna pass! Boy, when a blackout is cold, you gotta black out, man. Too many guys live just 10 minutes past his time. Ta-da-ta-ta. Yes, indeed. I just thought that. That's a look, actually. Look, page 84. So, you know, let's move. Oh, speaking of great ads, we might as well get on that subject there once in a while. A great, fantastic ad here from the silly page of the New York Times. Do you have any serious music for me in there? I think serious. Yes, I think you'll find it. Miss Brown, please look up from your notes for a moment. I think you will find on a copy there. We have, you know, some people. So I know a guy, Tony, who went through 3 years of college without once seeing a professor. His face was buried in leather notebooks in every class. He was just one of these guys who wrote down every word of every lecture. Of course, he didn't hear any of it. He just wrote it down like mad. All right, now, if you will please look at that disc there where it says Beethoven's Fifth. I think that's, it's on the first cut. No, it's not on that disc. No, just take it off. And look over, it's first cut on one side, 5,000 fantastic, incredible moments in music. And while we're waiting there for the confusion to subside, yes, there it is. Now, I've said it's got a hang up in the beginning. Beethoven always did have that hang up. It's got a hang up there in the beginning there. We must salute the New York Times and its silly page. This is, of course, August. And during the month of August, I think the silly season rises to its greatest and most shrill epitome of silliness. In fact, you recall a few years ago, my radio show was once referred to in the editorial columns of Life magazine. And it was in August, and they called my show an example of the silly season at its worst. Well, of course, Life is in a great position to throw mud pies. Speaking of silly season, they've had a long one. However, I don't know whether it's a silly season or whether it's the season when reality begins to take over. I'm not so sure. You know, I think we often call reality silliness itself. The other stuff, you know, the big schlemoo that we put on to pretend that we're important and all that, and that life has fantastic, incredible meanings that ripple on and on. All these things, I believe, are the periods when we call them solemnity and seriousness. I think that the silliness comes around in August, when guys throw transistor radios at each other and yell out of cars. And, you know, all right, please, serious now. No, hold it. I don't want to be accused of not being serious. This is a very serious radio station. And, in fact, the other day I got a memo from one of the upper offices, and the memo was headlined. It said, subject, the seriousness of American humor. And it went on to explain to me that American humor is essentially serious and that one must take a view of the world, that it is a dynamic, moving thing. And a thing that we're all involved in and must be treated with a certain amount of what they used to call in Hessville, Indiana, kid gloves. well, there's another phrase for that along the avenue. It's, I wish I could use some of the great phrases that are in the back of my mind that describe things even better than... Well, all right, all set now. From the silly season and from the silly page of the New York Times, another advertisement that spells it out. That is not Beethoven. Take it off. This is the silly season, all right. Especially in our control room. Well, now, while we're pausing here briefly, speaking of the silliness, we might as well admit this is WOR AM at FM New York. I ought to give some other station break call here. You know, say this is WABC, the home of dynamic. Now, you got that little hick. Now, are you with me? Hey, you got a commercial in there? Do I have to keep yelling at you? Well, here, let's have it then, friend.
Sir, the airline just called.
Who is the airman?
Your jet leaves at 8:45 tonight.
He could be you, a man with a thirst for a manly brute.
You arrive in Rome at 10 tomorrow.
Free up the foreman. Every time, shoot the bolder, keener tasting ale.
Will there be anything else, sir?
Valentine.
There's a little bit of the ale man in all of us. And nothing brings it out like a Ballantine ale. Bolder, keener, more to the point. Ballantine ale, the ale man's ale.
Who is the ale man? He could be you, a man with a thirst for a manlier brew. 3 out of 4 men, every time choose the bolder, keener tasting ale. Ballantine.
Oh, yes, there's nothing like a temperamental stenographer. Well, now, here, we're all set now. Have you got Beethoven set in there? Oh, listen, I know a boss who is so scared of his secretary, seriously, that he calls in every morning to find out what mood she's in. He calls up the receptionist and says, how is she today? And the receptionist is smiling. He says, fine, I'll be in 20 minutes. And if she says, be careful, Mr. Bullard, he says, you can get me at the country club after 2. And now, Beethoven. There you go. See, there's that hang up. Watch it now. I told you, nice. You got to listen to me. All right, all set. From the silly section of the New York Times, we salute man's serious pursuit of the inexplicable and his pursuit of eternal bliss. New 10 Commandments ballpoint sets, retractable. A different commandment on each pen. Protestant, Catholic, Hebrew versions. 10 colorful ballpoint pens, plus a free bonus of 10 extra beatific refills. Colors, Protestant, green and white. Catholic, red and white. Hebrew, blue and white. Yes, a terrific gift. 10 Commandments ballpoint pens with retractable points. Order on 10-day money-back guarantee. You must be delighted with these commandments. I can see a guy getting ready to sign a contract, and he looks down, and his ballpoint pen says, "Thou shalt not steal." Bring it up, Tony. Anything, Tony. All right, then stop it. Hold it. Crying out loud. Nothing worse than an overflow of Beethoven. All right, now set it back again. Huh? Well, anyway, I think the idea of a Ten Commandment ballpoint pen set has certain merits. And I can imagine a guy signing his credit card somewhere in a little hotel, and he looks down and says, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife." And what? Yes, Carvel. You're talking about Carvel frozen fruit or what? Oh, cover. I see. Thou shalt not covet. Oh, I see. That's, I said covet there. It's a T. Only in our time, I'm serious now, I can imagine Moses or Christ coming back, and I'm sure that a lot of people who have a 10 commandment, I notice they have all 10 of them there too, and they come and it says a different commandment on each pen. You know, that reminds me of these guys that have got these sweatshirts. I have an idea for a sweatshirt. Friends, who would like to turn out a shepherd line? Are there any good, hard-hitting Garment District guys listening to us tonight? I have an idea for a tremendous line of sweatshirts. You know, sweatshirts, the kind that guys wear when they're riding around the convertibles, T-shirts. Not the kind that says, "I like Beethoven." That's ridiculous. You know, "I like Haydn," or "I dig Nietzsche," that kind of stuff. I'd like a sweatshirt that has one single word on it, and all it says, with big exclamation points after it, just says, "Repent." I mean, that'd go over. Oh, I think that'd be great at the diner. I really do. Just says, "Repent." And I could see some guy wearing his chinos and his worn sneakers. He's carrying his banjo, and all it says... I got a lot of ideas. Or one that simply says, "I'm a slob." Yeah, I think so. Or simply say, "Stamp out slobs." And, of course, that would be worn by all slobs. Oh, sure. George Orwell predicted this years ago. There's no change. Speaking of slobs, you got my piece up there? What the heck happened to it now? Oh, here it is. Here it is. Please give me humoresque. Humoresque. This is one of those fooling around shows. And it's... you know, what difference does it make? I mean, what is life but a lot of fooling around? I got in the elevator the other day, and we were coming up to the 24th floor. It was filled with these little, you know, these little gray types, these little short men that have a big, fat, bulging briefcase. And winter and summer, they wear these odd little felt fedora-type hats with the wide brims and the high bands. You know those guys. And they're always working on their taxes. You come in here Saturday morning at 2 a.m. You can come in here. There's six of these little guys going up and down in the elevator working on their taxes. Sunday morning, they're working on their taxes. Now, I know what they're doing to their taxes, of course. They're not really working on... Well, maybe if you want to put it that way, they are working on their taxes. But these little guys up and down, they go millions of them. And so I'm standing in the elevator, and there's a guy in the elevator I happen to know. And it was a beautiful day, you know, a fantastic day. And I looked across the elevator at him through the crowded room. And I said, "What are we doing here? And such a great day out." And he said, "I don't know." And suddenly, eight little guys turned around. You could hear the creak of their starched collars, and you could hear the rustle of the tax return forms in their briefcase as they turned. I had asked a prime question. Well, all of them know what we're doing here. We're working on our taxes. That's what life is about. Life is about making dough. You know, somebody sent me have you ever seen any of these financial newsletters? They are some of the most sad reading material that man knows. I mean, really sad. These little financial newsletters, you know, every week, there must be 1,000 of them. And they're mailed out to poor hopefuls, you know, guys who figure that they're big, hard-hitting players of the market. They got 7 stocks of gold-plated uranium, 17 shares of Canadian Nickel-Plated Rubber Heel Corporation. They're buying these little penny-ante stocks, and they get these things. And they're somehow... Getting yourself a financial newsletter gives you a feeling of being official. It's pure pap and a yard wide, of course, in almost all financial newsletters. It's written, usually most of them are written by little down-at-the-heel guys who have offices on Wall Street. They have to have a Wall Street. They have to be on Wall Street or down in the financial district. And there are the equivalent, you know. It's grown up in America in the past 50 years. There is the equivalent. In the financial world, I'm talking about the official financial world, to the little Broadway Sharpie run-down at the heels agent. There are very few guys I know who are really sadder than the little theatrical has-been, would-be, never-was producer, agent, name it, you know. He's always got a big deal. I'll never forget the guy that I met one time, wavy hair, you know, and he's got his hair all fixed up, and he has a Chesterfield coat, but he's got the look in the eye. I don't know what it is. It's the look in the eye of a man who is afraid at any second somebody's going to put a hand on his shoulder and say, "Fred, it's all over." Really, he's got that look in the eye, see, but he's always very jazzy. And he comes up and he hits me on the back and he says, Shep, I finally made it. And I said, what? You know, I thought, you know, David Merrick's called, or for God's sake, you know, who knows, Zanuck is on the phone, wants him to come out and produce an epic or something. I said, what? He says, shh, don't say anything. I said, what is it? He says, shh. I have just gotten the rights west of the Mississippi for the George White scandals. I said, the what? It's the George, you know, the famous scandal. What do you mean? What? It's the biggest thing on Broadway, the George White scandals. The biggest thing on Broadway. That's the biggest thing on Broadway. George White scandals. What? You mean, you mean those things that George M. Cohan and all those, you know, the people like, what were those guys, Harold Lloyd and all that, were in with 150. He says, yeah, he says, just think, west of the Mississippi, I can produce them anywhere. And he went off down the street with big bluebirds flying around him and clouds, and you could hear, you know, you could just hear the uranium clicking in his little liver, you know, and he was radiating. He was so happy. And he walks down the street and smartly turns left into the automat. There to sit with the rest of his cronies and talk about the big deal he's just consummated. Now, I'm telling you, so help me, this is... Well, now, that is true in the financial world. Yeah, there are millions of little guys who once made a killing on the market in 1932 or something, and who have long since lost it. Killing, I mean, you know, they had a stock and they sold and they made $40. And ever since that time now, they're financial experts. And these guys are doing roughly to the little investor what these producers, quote, these directors, quote, these agents, quote, are doing to the hopeful non-actor, non-playwright, non-whatever he is, non-angel who comes to town and wants to get into showbiz. They prey off them, and there's millions of little agents, got little offices all up and down Broadway, and they are just waiting. They just got their little old eyes bugging out, you know, it's like a spider web, waiting for the trains that come in on Penn Station, Grand Central, the bus down here, the bus terminal, wherever anybody comes from Cleveland, Utah, New Mexico, who wants to be in the theater, these guys are there. And they sell them all kinds of services. Now, look, son, I'll tell you, son, look, the first thing you got to have is pictures. Now, listen, I'll send you to this place where you can get the right pictures. You got to have what we call a composite. Now, you don't know nothing about showbiz, but I'll tell you. Yeah, I know you got plenty of talent. I saw them groupings. You've got plenty of talent. I could tell just by the way you walked in this office that you got it, and we're going to make it come out of you. Now, the first thing you got to do is go down to this address. Here, give this address and tell them Stanley sent you, see? Stanley sent you. Now, I'll give him a call on the phone. I'll go out right out now, and I'll make a call on the payphone, so you know I'm calling my... tell them Stanley sent you, and listen, for $50, you get yourself a set of fine composite pictures, and then you bring them into me. And let me tell you, let's see, it'll cost us about $40 to mail them out. Now, let's see, that's about $10 for stamps. We'll need $15 for expenses. You know, there's a lot of expenses. We've got to make phone calls. We've got to get the girls in to mail them up. And, well, you hurry on back. I'll call Stanley on the phone. Now, while you're gone, I'll be calling Merrick. I'm going to call Merrick. I'm going to say, listen, Dave, I'm sending a kid over, and by God, you got to see this kid. Now, I know, oh, wait a minute, wait. Hey, listen. Are you interested in pictures? I mean, movies, you know? Are you interested? Now, a lot of good artists are not interested in movies, but are you interested in movies? I mean, are you not? All right, kid, listen. Oh, of course, I wouldn't put you any junk. No junk at all. None of these little two-bit Class B fly-by-night seven-reelers that down here at 42nd Street. Listen, I got a friend up in the Bronx who's turning out an art film. Now, it's a wonderful film. Now, listen, I'll have you... I'll call him. Listen, you come out. You hurry out back. You go down to Stanley's. Hurry out back, and I'll be right here waiting for you, son.
And so, hope springs eternal in the human breast. The neophyte hits the street running. His hot $150 burning in his pocket, but it won't be there long. And Stanley sits in his little web, his eyes glittering, his little web fluttering as each new butterfly strikes the outermost tendrils. Hope springs eternal in the human breast.
Oh, yeah, and you think I'm making this up, I'll tell you. There must be 6,000 of them, and just get out your yellow book and look in under the title Theatrical Agents. And I suggest call the first 38 and find out who they handle. And what's so sad is about every third or fourth guy that you run into, he will tell you, and of course he's got nothing. Oh, listen, kid, I'll tell you. Who I got? Who do I handle? Well, let me tell you who I handle. You think, listen, you're not dealing with no small timer here. I don't have much of an office here. Of course, you know, I'll tell you what. I don't believe in big offices. I say put your money in the client. I say put your dough into promoting the client. He's paying the money. He's paying the dough. I'm interested in art. I am not interested in big offices with all his rugs and all his jazzy art on a door. Listen, I'll tell you what I'm interested in, people. I'm interested in people. And sure enough, you look out there and you see 400 neophytes all lined up in a row there. They're called marks. 400 of them are lined up there in a row, you see. And he's interested in man. How he's interested in. I'm interested in people, kid. Now, look, the first thing you got to have is a name. You can't come in here and tell me your name is Charlie Epstein. That is not a marquee name. Charlie Epstein is not a marquee name. It's a good name? Good name. Very good name. But it is not a marquee name. Now, wait just a minute. Hold it. Marcia? Hey, Marcia, come here and take a look at this kid. Just take it. Now, wait. Stop in the door there, Marcia. Hold it. Just look at him. Now, kid, turn a little bit. Get the light there on the face there. Hold it. Marcia? Who? Gregory Peck. That's right. This kid is a spitting image of Gregory Peck. All right, now, Marcia. Now, listen, Marcia, listen. Pull down a blinds. I don't want that fink across the street to see this kid. Yeah, all right. This kid is hot. All right. Now, wait a minute. Now, just a minute, kid. Now, look. Has anyone ever told you look like Gregory Peck? Oh, come on. Now, don't be bashful. Come on, now. All right. I'm telling you, Stanley, I've been on the street here for over 50 years. You look like Gregory Peck. I remember when Peck walked in here the first day. Greg walked in, and I said to him, Gregory, them cheekbones are commercial. Them cheekbones are coming. You know, he didn't believe me? That fink walked out of his office, and now look at him. Look at him now. Well, who was right, me, Stanley, or him, Gregory Peck? I'll tell you. Now, look, kid, you look just like Gregory. Now, you got to have a good name. I'll bet you don't know what Gregory Peck's real name is. Well, I'm not going to be the one to tell you. But I'll tell you this. Your name is not Charlie Epstein no more. Marcia, what about Gaunt Rockwell? No, all right. Hold it, kid. Your name is now Craig Thor. And you have them printed right down at the bottom of that beautiful, beautiful pastiche that we're going to have. We're going to have the composite. Craig Thor. It's spelled with a K. K-R-A-G. Put it down, Marcia. K-R-A-G-T-H-O-R. Craig Thor. This kid's going to go all the way. All right, now you tell him, Stanley, now get down there, get that composite kid, Gallup, tell him Stanley sent you, and we'll be all set to roll. Oh, look at that boy is a spitting image of Gregory Peck. All right, get going now, kid. All right, Marshall, let the next one in, All right, the next one. Oh, baby, where have you been all my life? Wait, hold, Marshall. Take a look at this little girlie, Marcia. Who does she look like? Hold it now. I haven't even told her. Who does she look like, Marcia? Audrey Hepburn. Has anyone ever told you look like Audrey Hepburn? Well, now, there's another side to this scene, which... Oh, yeah, it's just really sad. Now, one other thing, though, that must be said about all of these guys. They have one stock line, one thing that they keep, that they always have. Oh, I'd say three out of five of them have, and it is this one. Please, Hope Springs Eternal Music. This is on the second visit. All right, now look, Charlie, you don't mind if I call you by your real name. After all, we're only in the office here, Charlie, and I don't, you know, Craig Thorpe. All right, now. All right, Charlie, look. We got the composite now. Now, the next thing we're going to have to work on is, well, we've got to take a little work. What does all good art mean? Work, art means work. Work, 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 work. You don't think for 1 minute. That, well, what's her name? Oh, that girl that sings in the opera. Now, Maria Callas? Callas? You don't think she got there by not working? Let me tell you, that girl night and day. Sing, 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 sing. Now, the next thing we are going to have to do is to get a little work under your belt. Now, I have a friend. Now, let me tell you, this friend has offices in Carnegie Hall. Now, you all know Carnegie Hall. Offices in Carnegie Hall and only takes one new pupil a year. One new pupil. But me, for Stanley, she'll take you. Now, singing lessons will cost you $10 a week. One lesson for $10, and let me tell you, it's worth every last penny of it. Every last penny. Now, just a minute. I'm going to call. Hold on. Marcia, will you get Mademoiselle Rosedale on the phone, please? She takes one pupil a year, and let me tell you, her pupils are singing in all the opera houses all over the world. Do you know that at least five of her pupils right now are singing right on Broadway in every last Broadway musical, every last one? And none of them could sing when they come here. Come in here. Go, Amy, Fossil. Get her on the phone. Let's go, Marcia. Come on. We can't wait. They're booking people every day. We got to go. They're reading them right now. Hello? Stanley. Oh, come on now. She just loves me. Hold on. Yeah. Well, listen. I don't want to talk right now. I'm going to send the boy down. His name is Craig Thorpe. K-R-A-G... No, on a level, actually, that's his name. K-R-A-G-T-H... it's Greek or something. K-R-A-G-T-H-O-R. Big, handsome, looks like Gregory Peck. Yeah, Gregory Peck! When? All right, fine, thank you. Only for me, huh? Yeah, very good, very good. Listen, get down there right now. 5 minutes, she says 5 minutes only. If after 5 minutes, it's no go because there's seven other kids coming and you're going to be the first one. Tell her Stanley sent you. Your name is Craig Thorpe. K-R-A-G-K-R-A-G-T-H-O-R. Okay, fine. All right, go on. Come on. Get going, son. Now, go on. We got to start working. We got to get that voice. Come on. Marcia! Marcia, will you get Sophie on the wire? Tell her we got another one coming up for dancing, too. Yeah, okay? And then of course is another little scene too that they've got. It's a great scene, and this is the distinguished client scene. Almost every last one of them has a distinguished client in his little book, and the distinguished client, Tony, almost invariably is an actor who made her last picture in the fall of 1932. And she's right. He'll say, wait a minute. Hey, oh, Marcia, will you get Claire on the phone? Listen, I suppose you're going to hear a lot of talk about a lot of agents about who they handle. You know who I handle? For years I've been handling it. Clara Bow. And let me tell you, Merrick's doing a thing for her next fall on Broadway. We've got a thing coming up. Claire, get Claire on the phone. Oh, man. Now, one of the most, and of course, the point of this whole tirade here is that these, that this particular area has crept into the financial world. There are thousands of little down-at-the-heel guys who wear Chesterfield coats and bowler hats, who have a stock of Homburgs and gold-headed canes, And they have an office on Wall Street, usually a very low number, like number 8 Wall, or 6, or 5, or 3, or even 1, or 2. Somehow they've gotten themselves a broom closet. And many of them have just got a little mailing address, you know, but as long as it has a distinguished Wall Street address, they're in business. And so they turn out their little newsletter, which is a weekly or a monthly. And in the living room of his little place there is his girl, usually his ex-wife, or quite often it's his sister. And she works the mimeograph machine. And they turn out things, and it's always marked confidential. Confidential, a world economic service that anticipates price trends and business movements on a worldwide scale with deep and fantastic insight. And it's very official. Monetary policies, commodities, security markets, economic trends, consultation, investment portfolios. Well, all tremendously. It's got, you usually have great names, like the, I'll just pick one out of the hat, like the Witherspoon Research, let's see, the Witherspoon Research Center for Economic Trends and Economic Philosophies. That kind of thing. A prediction bureau for men who are on the ground floor of all the big deals. And another another one of the things is that they always send you a flyer that says, we only allow 2,000 men. There are only 2,000 subscribers to our dynamic service. Now, two of our subscribers have recently been elevated to prime ministership of two big countries, leaving our ranks open. There are now two openings for new subscribers, and we have carefully screened thousands of applicants and have come up with your name. You are now privileged to be. Of course, it costs you $50 a year, you know. Sad little thing. Some of them make the most wild, interesting statements. Here's one here. I think this is kind of a nice statement. It opens up, and this is the first line. Can I have a little Hope Springs Eternal music there, please? The most important thing in our lives today is what happens to interest rates and the value of the dollar. That's going to surprise Tennessee Williams. The most important thing in our lives today is what happens to interest rates and the value of the dollar. Well, I guess it is. Of course, each one of these people, in his own little way, is totally enveloped in the world of that thing that he's got. You go to one of these little agents, and these little agents are far more steeped in theater lore, far more steeped in names. They read every last little theatrical casting list that comes out. Than the big ones. You go to a big producer. It's fascinating. A big producer will rarely talk about the theater, and more than that, he often doesn't know anything about it. He doesn't have the, you know, the big. By knowing, I'm saying he knows the theater, but he doesn't know what Merrick is doing next week. He doesn't say, "Oh, St. John Terrell, let me tell you, I'll tell you, 1948." It's the accumulation of the non-essential, trivial fact that makes many of these guys feel like they're in the business. If you accumulate enough trivia, like fur, like wearing a fur coat all over you, little facts of who's casting for, who's looking for chorus girls this week, who's putting on a review in Atlantic City, who's got a big show going on in Cairo, Illinois. These guys have a great fund of that kind of knowledge. Now, I remember when I first came to New York, I had been in and out of town, various radio and TV things, one thing and another. And the first time I ever ran into one of these guys, it was fascinating. It was, to me, a revelatory meeting because he looked and acted like an old movie character's interpretation of a Broadway Sharpie. Now, I wondered whether he was playing that because he had seen a lot of movies starring Jimmy Gleason. You remember Jimmy Gleason running around, "All right, kid, we'll get you into Madison Square Garden the first week that we go into training." Now, the first thing you got to do, kid, you got to get yourself a set of trunks, you got to get yourself a set of shoes, and we're going to get yourself in training. We're going to go down to Steelman's Gym this afternoon. At, you know that, remember Jimmy Gleason? I think Jimmy Gleason, more than any other performer in the American theater, if you can call it the theater, set the trend for thousands of guys who, and set the trend, he set the prototype, the mold. And so I get on the phone to this guy, and I was introduced to him by a friend of mine. He said, look, you just gotta see this guy. And of course, these men are always on first name basis the first instant you call them. It doesn't make any difference. Believe me, if Charles de Gaulle called one of these guys, hey, Charlie! Hey, for God's sakes, Charlie, come on in. They're always looking for Frenchmen here in New York. This would be his first line. And so I call this guy. And I don't know him. He doesn't know me. You see, and I say, hello, we have a mutual friend, and my name is Shepard. My name is... Shep! He said, yeah, of course. He said, come on in. Well, of course, he immediately thought that here was a mark. Well, I went into his office, and there it was up on Broadway, and you never saw anything like it. It was honest to George, honestly. It was right out of a Jimmy Gleason movie. He's sitting in a desk there. He shared an office with about four other Sharpies of different types. He was kind of the spearhead Sharpie. He was the Jimmy Gleason type. There was a guy sitting there who looked exactly like Sidney Greenstreet. He was the sinister, big-time review producer type. And he always liked to pretend that he was going to do a big girly show. Well, he did have girly shows in this apartment continually, and they were always, but, you know, that's another scene. And so here is Jimmy Gleason sitting at his desk with nine phones going all the time. I don't know how they have, these phones are working, because they never seem to do any deals or make anything happen, but the phones are ringing all the time. And outside in his waiting room, there must have been at least 25 guys. There was a guy with a seal. There were four Chinese girls who did a juggling act. And Gleason is sitting with his hat pushed on the back of his head, and he says, all right, now look, I don't care what you say, you're not going to get her at that price. No, you're not going to get her at that price, no. I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. You know who you're talking to? Oh, yeah? Well, the same to you. Hey, listen, baby, the next time that Merrick calls, tell him I'm out, the slob, yeah. And there is old Jimmy Gleason at work with his hat on the back of his head, his cigar going, and all around his desk are empty coffee cups from Chock Full of Nuts. And every 5 minutes he says, hey, baby, any of you want any coffee? What do you want to drink? What do you want? How do you want it? Black? Do you want it all regular? Hey, look, there's coffee in the whole can. Yeah, okay. And by the way, will you please get Zanuck on the phone? Yeah, get Daryl on the phone, yeah.